This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
It is hour number two. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Glad you can be with us. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. Dan Frivoli is going to join us from Bleacher Report. We're going to talk about the NBA playoffs with the play-in games coming up today and tomorrow. And, of course, the big one is Golden State against the Lakers, with the winner becoming the 7th seed. And I was talking about this last hour. I don't think if you're Phoenix, I think either one of these teams should scare you. I think especially the Lakers, especially with LeBron and the way he can turn it on in the postseason, he's just too difficult of an out when he gets to the playoffs. But Golden State has just been playing, you know, with Steph Curry lighting it up in an MVP type of fashion. I think if you're Phoenix, this is going to be a really good opening round series to really test what kind of team you are. And normally we don't say that about seven seeds going up against twos. And neither, especially eights versus ones, because whoever loses this game is going to be the favorite to get the eight seed. And if you're Utah, it's the same scenario. If it's Golden State or if it's the Lakers, you're in that same kind of boat. But we are going to have an NBA playoffs where we're going to be going to different arenas, and we're going to have some fans in attendance, and we're going to have some sort of familiar surroundings that we're used to. The NHL is sort of doing that now in its playoff series, in its NHL playoff series. But I'm curious to see how the Canadian border situation with COVID is going to work as they progress with the Stanley Cup playoffs. But last night got off to a game two win by Boston, a game one win by Colorado and Carolina, the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA playoffs. It may be mid-May and we're more used to this sort of atmosphere in April. But I'm glad it's here, and I'm glad it's taking up a kind of, it's going to take up some real estate on the calendar that we don't usually have anything going on. You know, we usually get the NBA finals wrapped up in June. We have the NBA draft, and then it's kind of the off season in the NBA where you've got players kind of getting courted by other teams. We've got training camps coming up, and then we've got, of course, preseason NFL games. This will at least extend its playoffs on both of these sports into an area of the calendar that's usually pretty vacant. But coming up, the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. On Twitter, you can hit us up at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Glad you can be with us.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
It is the good, the bad, the dumb, the Tuesday edition. Here we go with the good of the day. Let's get things rolling right.
Well, we have two good.
Because
there is an update. There's an update to a story we talked about yesterday.
All right.
And that is defensive back Austin Peay. Defensive back Wontarius Bryant.
Yes, we talked about him being hoaxed.
Being hoaxed. Thinking he had a tryout with the Atlanta Falcons, so he made the trek on down there, only to be turned away because they didn't have him on their list.
Right.
Well, he did, in fact, get an invite.
All right.
To the Hub football camp in San Diego, where NFL scouts will be in attendance.
That's great. Good for him. Good for him.
I don't know if anything will come out of it, but at least he actually is getting a tryout in front of NFL scouts.
And that's all he wanted.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't say, like, oh, this cost me my
team.
Like, he knew, like, hey, look, I didn't get drafted. It's hard to make a team as a walk-on, or not a walk-on, but, you know, as an invite, a rookie invite. But I'll give it my best shot. That's all he was looking for. That's why he was sad.
Yeah, because
he
just wanted the chance.
He didn't get the chance, and now he gets the chance, and so his story has a happy ending.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, well, you know, obviously we'll update this further. Hopefully after this weekend we'll have even better news that he got invited to a team.
That would be kind of cool.
We'll see. But
we'll see.
At least he's getting a chance to showcase his talents.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a good result from a story that he thought, you know, was going to be embarrassing. But he turned out really well in this because he did, as we talked about yesterday, he did handle it really well.
And if he does make the team, that, I mean, there's going to be a book about it.
Yeah, it's true. Good point. Good point. All right, what's the second good?
The second good, I'm not going to say it's bad, but I'm choosing it to be a good story. We're going to celebrate Marv Albert, who announced that he will retire after the Eastern Conference Finals this year.
You know, Tim Brando had a great tweet about this, and he said, you know, Dick Enberg and Marv Albert, you know, there was a period of time where sports broadcasters were superstars, right? They were big stars, television stars. And Marv Albert and Dick Enberg and, you know, Howard Cosell, he was 100% right. He was. He was a big star. Big, big star. Nowadays, not so much. Nowadays, the industry has changed a lot. But he was a big time important. There's a lot of people that wanted to do what he did because of him. Like, he just had that sort of influence because of what he meant to basketball and sports in general. So
pretty soon, I mean, you know, the sad part of it all is pretty soon we won't have the yes on the sidelines anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
On your television call. But I mean, it's weird. I mean, I don't even think about it. Just, you know, I mean. He just is basketball.
Yeah, he really
I know
is
he's
basketball.
Done other sports, but I don't think he works. I don't think it works for him in other sports.
Yeah, I know. And you know, like Mike Breen got inducted to the Hall of Fame. Like he's fantastic, but he's not on the same Marv Albert fame level. You know what I mean? That's how the industry has changed, right? It's just it's so different. And Albert was again one of the mega stars of the sports broadcasting industry. Phenomenal talent, and you're right, synonymous with basketball. And if you can do something for that long, where you become so intertwined in the game that you become great, good for you. That's what a lot of people who are in this industry want to do. And it's very difficult to do. And in the ever changing landscape of broadcasting, he has survived a lot of different waves because of who he is. And so you're right. That is a good. Yeah. Celebrating the career.
Got to celebrate. I mean, you know, I know we're going to talk about him again after these conference finals.
That's true. That's
you know, there's got to be some sort of tribute that Turner Sports will put on for him.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Whoever will have it. And, you know, and hopefully he's got the first chair.
So, all right, what is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is the president of Hartford University, Greg Woodward.
Oh, what did he do?
He was heavily booed at last night's graduation ceremony. So much, in fact, that he left the ceremony early before his closing remarks.
Is there a reason why he's
there
being booed?
There is a reason why.
Yeah.
He decided that, you know what, probably a budget cut in some way, because that's, you know, that's what all these decisions are made from, but he decided to take his D1 program and drop it down to Division III. And these students are not too happy about that.
Sure, that stinks.
In fact, one graduation held up his ring finger because he had a national title ring. I'm not sure which sport it was. Just recently, as he was accepting his diploma, just held up his hand with the ring finger in his face.
Oh.
So, and they made the end. I mean, this was, he made this announcement, I think, beginning of May, late April. And it was after the team, Hartford, made the NCAA tournament this year.
Yeah, they did. You're right. They did.
And so dropping him down, there's none of that. You know, and just, I mean, it's, I don't want to say it's like a death knell for universities, but it kind of is. If you drop them down, I mean, now you're not going to get, you know, the recognition. It's sad to say, I mean, there are some universities that are based on academics, but a lot of them are, you know, get their money based on sports.
That's right. And that's where the importance comes. And that's where you get a lot of sort of alumni pride is through sports.
Yeah.
And then you get a lot of interest from students because of sports. I was watching the 30 for 30 on Miami that was made years and years ago. It was one of the first ones that was made. But then they did like a Miami follow-up. And they talked about – all the players talked about how here is Miami. It is a private school. It is a school – brilliant school. I mean, Miami is a great academic school. But their reason why their applications went through the roof was because of football.
Right.
Like, people weren't applying to go to Miami because it had a great chemistry department. Because the football team was winning national championships. And there's a level of some energy that you want to be a part of. And that affects – when you drop that school down, it affects all of those things.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to break into that, you know, this is the Harvard or this is the Yale or Brown, or, you know, those Ivy League schools, which we immediately think academics.
Right.
We don't really think sports. I mean, we almost use it as a punchline with Ryan Fitzpatrick being a quarterback from Harvard and still playing in this league because he's smart enough to do it the right way. But, you know, I mean, University of Alabama or Ohio State, those guys are going to keep bringing in huge numbers because of their athletics.
Exactly.
And the money comes rolling in a lot more because there's pride in them.
Good for the student body too.
Yeah. Not only that, but last week they stuck 1,300 flags in the ground outside his office. And that represented every single student who signed the petition because they want him removed. Because they didn't like the idea.
Yeah, that's too bad. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, and this is a preemptive dumb. All right. Tell me the last great Super Bowl halftime show you saw.
Prince.
What was the last one maybe that you were excited for?
Katy Perry.
Okay. See, I liked Katy Perry's show. I wasn't a big fan of Left Shark.
How could you not love Left Shark?
I didn't like Left Shark.
You didn't? Because yes. I thought it was awesome that he was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to do it. I'm just doing my thing. I totally forgot how this works.
That's true. there was a little bit of love there. Anyways, yeah. The reason why I'm bringing this up,
okay,
because I know it's way too early for us to decide who's going to play the Super Bowl halftime show. They're not going to announce that until the football season begins. But one artist has emerged, and I think it would be dumb of the NFL not to allow this guy to do it.
Okay.
Because the Super Bowl is going to be held in L.A. next year.
L.A., right.
This artist, very, very popular. You may have heard of him, Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg doing the halftime show?
You think
Snoop Dogg should do the halftime show?
Snoop Dogg said he would love to do the halftime show. In fact, so much that I think he already has Dr. Dre on board. And he said he can get Eminem and 50 Cent and whoever Dr. Dre wants to pull out of his magic bag.
You know what? That ain't a bad idea.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Think about it.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, they would have to do a censored version, obviously.
Right.
But I think that would be... I mean, it has all the potential to just fail miserably.
Sure. Do you think the NFL and Goodell would allow Snoop Dogg to headline the...
Well, he's kind of mellowed out a little bit.
He has mellowed out. You know what? That's a great point. I was actually talking to my son about this a while ago. Because he was on... he was in a commercial. And I said, man, 20 years ago, if you had told me this guy would be a corporate pitch man, I would have said you were crazy. Like, I would have never, ever guessed that he could make that transition where he could sell you products on TV. Like, whether it's chips or whatever else he's selling, hosting game shows. And I mean, he's really done. You're right. He's mellowed out a little bit. You know, he's
more of a businessman
now. He gets the wave of capitalism.
Yeah. So this is what This is what Snoop said. Hopefully the NFL will be smart and make the right decision. It's in Inglewood, California. It makes the most sense in the world.
It does.
I'm available. Dre's available. Eminem's available. Kendrick Lamar, 50 Cent. Whoever Dr. Dre wants to pull out of his hat to make this thing a professional event and make it big and the biggest effort they can have. It's just a matter of the NFL pulling the trigger.
Yeah. Does the NFL charge now for that?
Ooh.
There was an idea floating around that they were going to start charging artists to perform at the halftime show because they were giving away. They were basically giving these artists and the record companies 150 million people.
I mean, maybe, but.
And they said, listen, I mean, it's not the artist that pays, obviously.
Right.
It's going to be their record companies. But
Dr. Dre's a billionaire. He's fine.
Well, no, they wouldn't pay. Well, Dre would pay. And I didn't bring that up to say they can't afford it. But what I'm saying is that there's a bidding war for it. That's what I'm getting at. It's not just we want this. Like if the NFL can make 200 grand on another group that will come in and do it, there's going to be a bidding war for it. It's not always just about like, oh, it's California, it's Snoop Dogg, let's just do it. It's also like, yeah, we're going to do it, but somebody's paying for this.
Yeah.
And if another group is paying more, then that's the money we're taking. Like, we just lost a boatload of money during COVID. We're going to be making it up somehow.
Somehow.
So while it may be awesome that you three want to do it, but, you know, make sure we get all the money. But yeah, I think it would be great. I mean, I really like that angle. I really do. Yeah. I think that would be phenomenal.
Because I think, you know, I mean, one of the things we always pine for is, you know, have it make sense for the area that you're in. I mean, You know,
yeah, I think so too.
You know, Minnesota missed out on being able to showcase Prince. I mean, I know it was down in Miami a few years before that, but I mean, he passed away. Obviously, he wouldn't be able to do it. But, you know, I would say make it about the area, which they normally do.
Yeah, I think. You know what's funny is I think every halftime show, no matter who it is, right? Lady Gaga, Katy Perry, I mean, Shakira and J-Lo. Like, no matter who it is, there's always a feeling like it's never going to live up to what you expect.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even when, like, Black Eyed Peas performed, you always go, well, it's a Super Bowl halftime show, and these tend not to be. Like, you're just waiting to rip it. But I think if you have Snoop Dogg and Dre and all performing at halftime, I think it would live up to whatever hype you think it would be. I think it would live up to your expectation.
Yeah.
I mean, I just get that feeling that those guys would really put on the show you expect them to put on.
And they would represent L.A.
And
well.
They would absolutely represent L.A. only, well.
I mean, I know 50 Cent and Eminem aren't from L.A., but,
right, but still,
most of the guys are.
Yeah, I mean, if you got all those guys with the creativity that all of them have to put on a show, who know how to put on a show, I think they would say, look, you're going to get a great halftime
and
show.
You're not going to get a Hall of Mirrors. Sorry,
right,
weekend.
Right. You're like, even Bruno Mars, that was a joke.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even that was like, everyone was like, that sucked. That was terrible. This, I think you would say, I expect it to be good, and then at the end you'll go, that really was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you would. I think you're right.
So, your move, NFL.
Yeah, your move, NFL, is right. All right, that is the good, the bad, and the dumb. We've got Dan Favalli talking NBA coming up. Your tweets at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Keeping your car clean is simple. Inexpensive maintenance that can help keep your car looking like new. O'Reilly Auto Parts has car wash and wax for painted surfaces, as well as interior care products like leather and vinyl, carpet and upholstery cleaner. Visit O'Reilly for Clean Car Month. And the professional parts people make sure you get the best detailing products for your vehicles. Shop your local store or online at O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Did you see the result of the Mets-Atlanta game last night? Kevin Pillar getting hit in the face?
Yeah, I didn't see the result, but I saw that.
My God.
Just that stream of blood coming from the
stream
face.
Of blood. God. It drove in a run.
I know.
So there's that.
The nose knows.
My God.
Yeah, that looked scary. That's one of those things I don't show my kids, especially my son who plays baseball.
Oh, sure. Exactly.
He doesn't need to see that.
No, absolutely. Huascar Yanoa, who's a starting pitcher for the Braves, actually a really good hitter, too. He hits like home runs and stuff. He is out 10 days. Do you know why? He punched a dugout bench on Sunday in Milwaukee and suffered a fracture in his hand.
Yeah.
Like, you'd think you wouldn't do that if you made your living with your hands. You would go, I'm angry, I'm really ticked, but I'm not going to damage the things that make me a lot of money.
Yeah, I saw 2 months.
10 days is the list, but he's got to be out much longer than that. It's a fracture in your hand, unless you got potion.
On his throwing hand, by the way, too.
Right, yeah, his right hand. Right. Yeah. His right hand.
So,
Lee,
whatever happened to the good old days of just tossing the Gatorade bucket?
Let me bring this up, because I actually thought about this when I heard the news. Let's say you're really angry, right? Like you're ticked off enough to. Would you not blame a guy if he took a bat and just destroyed something? Because he's like, look, I'm not going to hit anybody with this bat. And it may look really menacing if I'm destroying a Gatorade cooler or a bench with the bat, but I'm not punching it, and I'm not hurting my hands, and I'll be able to pitch in 5 days.
That's the thing, though. We've seen that before. We've seen guys take bats and just, you know, start swinging things, and you just see guys in the dugout get up and like, I'm going to walk over here.
Yeah, exactly. Just let him, like, it looks menacing, and it looks like he's out of control, but at least he's not damaging his hands, which are vital to what he does for a living.
Or do baseball teams need to start saying, okay, guys, you know, instead of showing your frustration in the dugout, We've installed a batting, a hitting bag.
Yeah, right.
Down in the dugout. Down, you know, down in the stairways. Just go hit that for a little bit.
Exactly.
Maybe get a speed bag up there.
Has anybody ever punched anything, hurt themselves, and went, well, it was worth it. I was really ticked off. No, you end up going, that was stupid. Why would I do that?
Yeah, because it's either this. Either you hurt yourself or you hurt something else. Like I remember I had a fraternity brother who punched punched his door because he was mad. He was drunk, but he was mad.
Sure.
And he not only did he, like, he punched it with such force that he put a gigantic hole in the door.
Yeah, see?
And so it was like one of those things like, okay, now you got to fix it.
Yeah.
You know, what was your end game?
Yeah, what was the end game? Right. Exactly.
I always look at that. It's like, you know, we all get frustrated. We want to punch something, but then I think about it. All right, if I punch this, what's the end game here? You know, bruised knuckles? Is that good to work for me? Broken?
You know what my other takeaway from Major League Baseball so far is? The Yankees stink.
Yeah.
Like, they play good, and then they don't. Then they're terrible.
So focus on the Yankees stinking, not the other team on the West Coast that's not doing so well.
I know.
Focus on the Yankees.
They're terrible. Michael on Twitter, the cynical side of me has a theory. Oh, this is a pretty good tweet. Do you think Wontarius Bryant purposely hoaxed himself, hoping his story would go viral?
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. He goes, and then Michael adds, if so, I commend him tremendously. Yeah, that does sound like a story that somebody could do a little investigating and go, yeah, I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I don't think you got hoaxed, man. I think you showed up hoping that they'd just take you and said you were a victim, and then used the story and how well you handled it to get an invite to a tryout. Yeah.
I guess here's my question. Do defensive coordinators, because that's who he thought he got the tweet or text from, or anybody in the NFL, do they usually text people?
That's a good question. That's a great question. I think somebody should ask what the procedure is, because I think if you're an agent, right, even if you're a new to the game agent, I think there would be a standard way the NFL does business, right, when it invites rookies to minicamp, to rookie tryouts. I think all NFL teams would be on the same page. Like, look, if your client is invited, here's how it would work. You would get a letter or you would get an email. You would get a notification to then tell your client. We would never contact your client directly. So if your client is getting contacted directly, it is not from us. We do not do business that way. You know, it reminds me of like ads where they say, like, the IRS calls me every the IRS doesn't call.
They don't call people.
They mail. They don't call. So if anytime you hear somebody say, stop the IRS phone calls, they don't call.
They don't have time.
They don't have time because they have a way of doing business, right? They have a method of telling you, here's our problem with you. This is how we're going about it.
The NFL should
be the same thing.
And here's my other argument. That's a phone call you want to make. There are a lot of times. Phone calls in life that we dread. We push off. We don't want to call, you know, this company or that company. It's like, oh, I just don't want to be on hold. But if you're a defensive coordinator and you're about to call a player and invite him to try out for your NFL team, I would volunteer to make those phone calls.
Yeah.
Because the guy on the other end is going to be super excited.
But also, too, when you have an agent, like, he doesn't just negotiate your contract. He is like your legal representative.
Yeah.
Everything should go through your agent.
I'm taking it that this guy didn't have one.
He did.
Oh, he did?
He does. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
He did.
Well, Terry Bryant,
because his agent was the one that tweeted out his response to the thing. So and a lot of these guys have agents. I mean, the agent goes, sir, sure, come on in and we'll see what we can do for you. So he has representation, and everything should go through the representation. He shouldn't be getting phone calls or emails or text messages from any coaches. They should say, we are going through your we have your name. We have your agency. We know who you are. We know how to get in touch with you, but we're going through the proper channels, your agency. Yeah, texting a rookie and going, yeah, come on down to Atlanta and try out.
Try out for our NFL team.
It sounded like there would be a procedure. Like, here's a confirmation number. When you get here, we need this and this and this to make sure, you know, it's all good. You're right. I mean, it seems weird.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Dan Frivoli joins us from Bleacher Report. The NBA postseason begins tonight. Eastern Conference playing games. If you're a traditionalist, they probably won't start until the 7 and 8 seeds are all set. And we're actually in best of 7 first round series. But nevertheless, this is the way the NBA is doing the postseason in 2021. Like kind of like what they did last year. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Let's get right to it. So in terms of this play-in game, I know what the NBA was trying to do here. There was some buzz about players not liking this. In the end, do you think this is something they will stick with?
I do. Just given how many teams were still playing for something later in the season, there was still probably the usual amount of shenanigans heading into the last day or two of the year. But when you look at the final week, final 2 weeks of the season, there were still 23, 24 teams playing for something. And I do think it dissuaded some level of tanking where you only had like 5 or 6 squads that were really trying to lose for, let's say more than a quarter of the season. And so I do think it's something that they'll stick with moving forward. What will be interesting is, will there be more of a negative backlash in a year where maybe there's more distance between the 7-8 seeds in the conferences and then those 9 and 10 spots? Because if you're a team, the Lakers, and you are so much better than the 9-seed Grizzlies, where 4 games isn't a huge separation right now, but if it was 6 or 7, how do you feel about the idea that you could potentially lose your playoff spot to a team that was that much worse than you during the regular season?
Yeah, in the East tonight, you got Washington and Boston, and these are teams that are kind of heading in the wrong, opposite direction. Celtics are really beat up, and the Wizards got off to an awful start to the season, but then turned it around. In terms of the way you see, how do you see that particular matchup this evening?
That one's tough to get a hold on. Bradley Beal is dealing with his hamstring strain. It was visibly impacting him during their final game of the regular season. I am more inclined to favor the Wizards a little bit just because they are going to have Bradley Beal at all on the court. Boston's missing Jaylen Brown. Kemba Walker was a little bit better before he missed the final few games of the year, but he's been a roller coaster, and Boston is fairly shallow, where I feel like Washington's discovered some depth over the past few weeks, particularly on their front line. So it's a game that's tough to get a feel for, but the way that Russell Westbrook has been playing, and given how much better the Wizards defense has been over the past 7-8 weeks or so, this feels like a game that they'll be able to win.
In terms of the West, that big matchup on Wednesday, Golden State and the Lakers, and one of those teams is going to be the 7 seed going up against Phoenix. And if I'm Phoenix, I don't care who I'm playing. I would be worried about either team. But in terms of Golden State, is it all just Steph Curry? Who is contributing to what they're doing this year besides how much points Steph Curry's pouring in every night?
Draymond Green has been huge defensively for them. They have quietly one of the 5 best defenses in the league, and he's really the driving force of it. Andrew Wiggins has been really good on defense for them this year as well. On offense lately, they are still very much all Stephen Curry everything, but Jordan Poole has picked up his play ever since he returned from his, I think it was a right ankle injury a few weeks back, and particularly over the Golden State's last 5 games. And if he's going to hit some of the shots that he has been off the dribble, that might help Golden State navigate life, one, during the minute Steph isn't on the floor a little bit better, but also just give them a variance with how they can attack a defense like the Lakers, which is built to, they can't stop Stephen Curry, but they can definitely make life difficult on him. They can disrupt Draymond Green's high pick and rolls. So Jordan Poole is going to end up being their X factor in that game. And it's still one you look at where I think the Lakers are definitely more scarier, but Golden State does feel like a more well-rounded squad, given how much better some of the supporting cast has been playing.
Over in the East, Brooklyn will get the winner of tonight's Celtics-Wizards game. Only 8 times we've seen their big 3 play together, and there's a reason. There's been injuries. Is that a concern in this postseason? I mean, how healthy is Brooklyn going into the playoffs?
Yeah, I think that's a fair concern. James Harden looked good when he came back from that hamstring injury, but you're still sort of ramping up, and now you're going to get a good amount of time off here, which either could help or hurt him, because how long will it take for him to get his game legs about him. I don't think there's a concern on the court necessarily. We've seen that the offense is going to be wiped out when you have basically even one of the 3 on the floor, and the minute that all 3 of them have played together, they've been absolutely nuclear. I think it comes down to their defense for them. They do switch a lot. Are they going to be able to do that against every matchup? Does that actually help them? And they have to figure out how they're going to close games, who's going to be their go-to center in that situation. Will it be Blake Griffin, Nick Claxton, Jeff Green? Will they play two of those three guys together at points? So they have a lot of issues facing them on the defensive end still, but I think they're going to be fine offensively.
If we can see Philadelphia winning a title, if we can see Brooklyn winning a title, is Milwaukee in that group? I mean, Drew Holiday is a definite upgrade, and of course they've got Giannis. Are they championship or bust in terms of this postseason?
Yeah, they should be around that territory, especially given their first-round opponent is going to be the Heat. And so given what happened last season, you at least want to show that you can beat this team rather decidedly. I do think they belong in the same tier with Philly and Brooklyn. Giannis has shown that he can attack in some different ways this year. They've used him more as a screener. And like you said, Drew Holiday is a massive upgrade on offense over Eric Bledsoe. That's going to help them a ton against the way that Miami's probably going to defend them. And they're even a little bit more versatile defensively this year. They switched a little bit more. We've seen them go to zone as well. Giannis has defended a lot more of the five this year, where he's not off the ball as much. I think they are far more playoff-proof than they've been over the past 2 years. But the issue of Giannis's range and then the offense overall when they can't get out in transition, that's still a fair question, and they're sort of in prove-it mode. And so if you end this season with anything less than an Eastern Conference Finals berth, I think it's fair to paint it for them as a failure.
All right, let's go to the Knicks, because I think there's been a lot of fun buzz about this Knicks team, and they're fun to watch. And all jokes aside, they'll probably be angry at Tom Thibodeau a couple of years down the road, but right now they love playing for him. But what's their ceiling? I mean, they're not in the same category, but they are a 4 seed in the East. What would be a good result for the Knicks in the playoffs?
You want to see them put up a fight in the first round, and this is the series that I don't know that you should say they must win, but that they're capable of winning. And I think that's what you're looking for, because as good as they've been this year, as good as the defense has been, there's still a very placeholder-y feeling with them. There are a lot of players on one-year contracts right now. You have to make the decision of how do we reinvest in this roster? How do we get better from here aside from keeping Randall and Barrett in place and having Emmanuel quickly? And this is a good measuring stick going up against a team that's been surging in the Hawks as they've gotten healthier. And if you can put up a fight where this is a tough 6-7-game series, if you can win it, I would think that the first round is probably their ceiling, just given the team that they're going to have to face in the second round. It's going to be a Brooklyn or Milwaukee in that scenario, it'll be probably a Philly in that scenario. But I think you want to see them make it last and show that their defense can hold up and that the improvement from players like Barrett and Randall at least translates into the postseason.
That defense is, and that's kind of the staple of Thibodeau. It's grinding and it's tough. I don't think they could win a second round series against those elite Eastern Conference teams, but can they make it messy with that defense? Can they make it a really hard out?
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at the Sixers specifically, where their half-court offense can bog down a little bit if Joel Embiid isn't hitting his outside looks, that's a team where maybe they could turn, going up against that elite squad into a 6 or 7-game series. They are very selective with who they allow to take three-pointers, the Knicks are, and they have guys who can really swallow shots at the rim. Joel Embiid is obviously very physical, and I think he poses problems on their front line. Nerlens Noel is just very, very slight. And so are you going with Taj Gibson a lot at center? You probably can't get away with Randall or Toppin playing five in that series. But I do think the defense, especially when you're looking at what they do on the perimeter, the pressure, the help that they give there, that can make life difficult on just about everybody.
Let's give it a feel on the Utah Jazz. I mean, when they win games, they win them by a lot. Donovan Mitchell had the ankle issue. They got Rudy Gobert. In terms of a 1 seed, how powerful is that Utah Jazz team?
They're certainly powerful. I do think there's a level of concern knowing that Donovan Mitchell missed the rest of the regular season, and so he's going to come back for the start of the playoffs and is just has to ramp up from that point. Does that impact their offense at all? The bigger question for them will just be how can the defense hold up against, it could be the Lakers that they're playing, it could be the Warriors they're playing, so you have to defend it from the jump around Stephen Curry or LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And they do have the best defense in the league per possession, according to Cleaning the Glass, but they don't have that one lockdown defender to go up against the bigger wings. You do have Royce O'Neal to throw in a potential matchup with Stephen Curry, but that's not someone that you can just expect to neutralize. And so I'm a little bit more concerned with what they do defensively, because what Gobert does around the rim may not be as valuable against one of the two opponents that they're going to face in the first round.
Well, whoever wins in the Western Conference 7-8 play-in game is going to get Phoenix. There were the same kind of conversation around the Knicks, which is playoff experience. Do you buy that as sort of an Achilles heel for a team like Phoenix?
I do. I think it's fair because last year what they were doing in the bubble, even though it wasn't the playoffs, you didn't have any fans, and now you will be in places, whether you're playing the Lakers or the Warriors, where there will be opposing fans in the stands on the road games. Does that impact role players at all? And as you already alluded to, you only really have Chris Paul and Jay Crowder with serious playoff experience. That's definitely a factor, but they've been so good this year. They've beaten very good teams a bunch this year, and also their shot profile with the way that they're able to get to their mid-range jumpers and make them, those are looks that defenses are going to give them in the playoffs. And so it does feel like a lot of what they've done during the regular season is going to translate. And so if you're willing to paint them as a favorite against maybe the Warriors, I would understand picking them to lose against the Lakers, but they're still a team that I think should be fine leading into the playoffs despite that experience factor.
Last season, the Denver Nuggets came back from 2-3-1 deficits in the bubble to get to the Western Conference Finals. Now people were saying, okay, now it's due to make a next step. One of the fun parts about their series against Utah was Gary Harris was Donovan Mitchell. Harris is gone. Jamal Murray tore an ACL. Will Barton has been out for a while. They've got Jokic, but does he have enough help? Can the Nuggets take that next step? We all kind of thought they could after last season.
I think their ceiling is definitely capped to where I'd be shocked if they came out of the West now without Jamal Murray. But the way that Michael Porter Jr. played in his absence, if that shot-making is going to hold up in the playoffs and he's going to be able to work on the ball a little bit more like he did during the tail end of the regular season, they're still closer to a championship contender than not. Jokic has not only been spectacular this season, he's been one of the most clutch players in basketball. He's hit a ton of ridiculous jumpers in those moments. He's been able to scoot by guys off the dribble. You just couple that with his vision, capacity to make everyone who's on the floor around him better. They are a little shallow when you look at some of the other injuries they're dealing with, specifically P.J. Dozier. But I think beyond the first round, if you assume that they beat the Blazers, I still think they're going to be a problem for any of the Western Conference elites that they end up facing.
Dan, great stuff. Really appreciate your time as we kind of ran through quickly all these teams. I really appreciate it. Hope we get you on again soon. Thank you, my man.
No problem. Take care.
You got Dan Fravalli, Bleacher Report, going through the NBA playoffs and some of the teams to watch for as, the play-in games in the Eastern Conference tonight, play-in games in the Western Conference tomorrow. Progressive guest line, quote, buy and save on a home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. Some thoughts on the postseason, especially the Nuggets at that 3 seed in the West when we come back on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour, Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage, Gina Mortgage, a Fit Your Life Rocket Camp. So, listen, the Denver Nuggets are a team I'm pretty close with because I spent a long time covering them when I lived in Colorado, especially during years where they were not very good, and then Carmelo Anthony came, and we put up with a lot of first-round exits. And Nikola Jokic is a player. I've never seen a player like that in a Denver Nuggets uniform, a guy who could do so much. I mean, Carmelo Anthony was a big star, but Jokic is just an MVP-level talent. But when they drafted Michael Porter Jr., I was a little skeptical. Remember, Michael Porter Jr. was the highly recruited kid that went to Missouri and hardly played because he had back issues. He was really hurt and beat up and whatnot, and just said, all right, listen, I gave the college thing a go, but I could have gone right to the pros at a high school. I'm not wasting any more time. I'm going, even though I have a back problem. And he put up with that. But the Nuggets saw a potential, and Dan Fravalli was right. He's playing at a contributing level that Denver needs, because Jamal Murray being out is really tough. And listen, I get the trade. They traded Gary Harris, and that was the right trade to make. But Harris was the guy that was bogging down Donovan Mitchell in the bubble in that 3-1 deficit comeback by the Nuggets last season. That was one of the more exciting mano-a-mano matchups that you got in a playoff series last year. And sometimes you need a one little guy that just is a defensive bug and just can't contain him. And that was Gary Harris and Donovan Mitchell last year. That was fun. That was fun to watch. But I just don't think the time for the Nuggets is coming. I just don't. I think they're just they are a victim of their own geography. If they were in the East, I think they'd be right up there with Philadelphia. I think they'd be right up there in the terms of champion. They're not in the championship conversation. They're not. I'd be blown away if they won the NBA championship, even though they have the MVP, at least in my opinion, the MVP in Nikola Jokic. I'd be blown away. I just don't think they're that level yet. And it's kind of too bad because you have this window of opportunity with the right players, the right coach, the right setup. The Western Conference is too big. It's too strong. It's really hard to navigate. And, you know, here was their moment, right? A season where the Lakers would suffer, you know, a LeBron James injury, Anthony Davis injuries that put them battling for the seven seed with Golden State, who became irrelevant, losing Klay Thompson at the beginning of the season. He never played. And now you had Utah and Phoenix rising up and taking the top spot. Denver wasn't there. Denver could have finished third anyway if the Lakers were healthy and rolling along. They're about a 3-4-5 level team. And it's kind of disappointing because they've got this when Carmelo Anthony was with the Nuggets, people begged the Nuggets, you got to put people around him. You got to put another star around him. And their answer was Allen Iverson, and it just didn't work. They did not have enough to bring around. And I think the talent around Jokic is good. It's just not good enough in the West that is so incredibly deep. Well, enjoy these playoff games in the East tonight. Tomorrow's the big one. Tomorrow night, stay up for the big one between LeBron and Steph and the Lakers and Golden State. We will see you tomorrow. The Jake Asman Show is coming up next year on Sports Map Radio. Thanks for joining us. This is Wake Up Call. Tony D. Ron Culver.